And I even say send a dollar a week, and we're going to do this over. This is a side two. We're going to give them the address. This is side two of broadcast number 629, December 26, 1983. You know why I'm going to do this over? Some of you can hear this part over, because I didn't release the pause on the tape, and then I have to go home and do it over the second half, and then I have to bring it in like 10 miles each way, and you wouldn't want me to do that when I can be doing more research tomorrow and outlining the second part of the London Times. So we'll just get right into one more brief thing about that I said on the air, but I'll put it on the tape for those who get it, that out of Carlisle, Pennsylvania, thanks to a listener, World Watchers, out of the historical division, came a report of the 6th Panzer Army at the end in the Battle of Bulge of the Ardennes Offensive with Fritz Kramer, General Major of the Waffen-SS, and he worked with Mr. Wilhelm Munke, also a commander, right along at the end of the battle in November and December of 1944. They were side by side, and Mr. Munke surfaces again with Gerd Heidemann on his yacht and very much involved with the Waffen-SS, the recipient, that organization was the recipient of the $5 million that Stern magazine paid to Gerd Heidemann. But the mystery gets even more interesting, and I just briefly mentioned some of the names last week. So Munke and Kramer are active commanders with Mr. Dietrich, it was important to Joe McCarthy to release those people out of the Malmedy trials by 1948 and send them on their way. Some got out a few years later, but Kramer was out by 1948. And the other Kramer moved into the Pentagon in 1948, and Henry Kissinger left Claus Barbie and went to Harvard, put in by John McCloy and Fritz Kramer. That's the background on Henry Kissinger. Okay. My guests here have their heads a little surprised, but you listeners are old-timers, and you know all that. Huh? Okay. So anyway, we have the 6th Panzer Division run by Kramer, one-third are Waffen-SS, and in 1983, his buddies are all together, and Major General of the Waffen-SS also is never identified in any books after the war. There's no book that I've seen, and that's what the two members of Congress, their committee, are looking into from Washington, is that we can't find any book of World War II that we have that where Fritz Kramer was, except for the Battle of the Bulge. He wasn't in Poland. He wasn't with Rommel. How did Hitler trust him so much to be with Otto Skorzenium, Dietrich, and these people when he doesn't show up in any history book? Was he in America recruiting Henry Kissinger? Yes. Redundant, but yeah, you'll get it. Okay, now to update, yeah, as I say, if there's new people in the room, it's interesting because I know there's new listeners all the time, and I assume that they know what we all know, and it's wrong to assume that, and yet I don't want to take time to backtrack it. I will backtrack for 1 minute now on the programs I did on Hitler's diary. This was in May, May 2nd, May 9th, and May 23 of 1983. The Hitler diary cast of characters, I referred to the London Times then of April 24th. The first one was Gerd Heidemann, H-E-I-D-E-M-A-N-N. He collects Nazi things, such as Hermann Göring's yacht, formerly used by the King and Queen of England, Queen Juliana of the Netherlands, Prince Bernhard, who was also betraying the Arnhem battle and in the Bulge area with Mr. Casey, who is now CIA director, William Donovan, who went on to form the CIA from the OSS. There were meetings at the yacht in 1973 when Heidemann got it. SS Karl Wolff, the liaison that I described in The Rebel, the man between Himmler and Alan Dulles, who decided he'd rather go American than Russian, was partying on the yacht 10 years ago in 1973 and up to the present time. He worked for Mussolini. Then Mussolini fell. He worked for the Nazis. He was caught running Treblinka and a few other places, and finally was put in a camp about 10 years after the war for a short while. Worked in Milan with the Gestapo and Walter Rauff, R-A-U-F-F, who's down in South America in Chile, and they were down, all this gang, visiting him just recently. And Brigadier Wilhelm Munke, Fritz Kramer's buddy, was one of the people who has frequented and does frequent the yacht. Mr. Heidemann has the yacht now, but he's in jail in Hamburg, and he's not going to tell very much, but it was 7 months ago we were talking about that. And the various people that the pilot, that took Hitler's papers that were supposed to have been kept in a hayloft. The people that worked with Hitler flying the plane, several planes went out one evening. One crashed. One actually did crash, and that's a true story. And there were papers of Hitler's on there. That's a true story. And some of the other papers, the planes waited, and they landed safely and left the bunker and all went out peacefully. I talked about Operation Seraglio, Martin Bormann's plan to remove Hitler's files and records, and he had 10 aircraft and 5 safes. And now, 7 months later, they tell about baiting Mr. Heidemann with going down to South America and seeing Martin Bormann, and he had headquarters in Madrid. He still is alive and very active. That was one broadcast this last spring, and then we went into you, Trevor Roper, who not only identified the fact that Adolf Hitler died in the bunker, it hadn't been in the bunker, he was head of British intelligence, knighted by the Queen, but he made up the story of the Hitler death, or the bunker story that later had no basis, in fact, from what he could have known at that particular time. Then same you, Trevor Roper, was the man who is on the board of London Times, knighted by the Queen, one of the top heads of British intelligence, who authenticated the Hitler diary. Now, the trick about the Hitler diary, part one, before we get into the next article, I've only got 20 minutes to cover this one story. Part of the thing about the Hitler diary is that they had them in Europe for 2 years, Stern and other people. And they had this, one person said 101% accurate. The only problem was once they went public and the world saw them, they said that the paper and the ink came from 1954. Therefore, it couldn't have been real if you assume that Hitler died. If the paper and ink is new and nobody knows where he is and everyone he knows is together now, why do you have to assume that he didn't write some of them? Because they're making money off him and it's going to his old Waffen-FF, and that was formed to preserve, the Liebersdart was formed to preserve his monarchy for 1,000 years. So if the ink and paper are the objects that throw it off, but everyone who looked at it first, Mr. Heidemann worked for Stern Magazine 20 years. He was one of the best reporters. Why would he betray the people that have supported him, sent him around the world? And why would you, Trevor Roper, catch the London Times on such a story when he's on the board of directors of London Times and there's nothing more tenacious than publishers holding on to their company or protecting or taking care of lawsuits, and they really investigate something like that would be outrageous for them to say it's true without doing something about it. Now, the London Times had a story that I briefly mentioned last week, a great story. Well, this is the December the 11th, 1983, London Times. It's a two-part story by Gita Sereny. I told you she's now visiting with Mrs. Speer, writing a book about the architect of Hitler's plans. He came over this country and was very successful. She's a London journalist over there working with Mrs. Speer. And she did 7 months of investigation into the Hitler diaries, and she ends up with a riddle and a conundrum. No answers, but a lot of names. And because her article brings out more names and the more interesting that work, we can just assume that we don't know much about it, but we know more about who the people were. Now, briefly, she talks about a Hans Bauer who's involved with the diaries, and I'll tell you the story, but just the London Times has a little bit about them. He was an SS general, and he was one of Hitler's pilots who's involved in the diary story, and he took Hitler's writings and diaries on that plane that went down in Bornersdorf, Bornersdorf, Hans Bauer. The other really nefarious character is Medard Klapper, K-L-A-P-P-E-R, and this article has some really horrendous things to say about him. He was the head of the Liebensdart for Adolf Hitler, the SS guards. He began his work in the concentration camps, and he's heavily tied in with Gerd Heidemann. His name is Perius Medardus Kapper, K-A-P-P-R, as I said. He's a traveling salesman for the Waffen-SS at the current time, and the organization that they have to fund the continuation of their team is pronounced Haig, H-I-A-G. You could reverse it Haig. But that's the connecting link of the Liebensdart. And this is a new name to me, Mr. Kapper. I've been looking it up. He worked with Mr. Heidemann, and he travels between all the top Nazis and with Martin Bormann and seems to be the official bag man, a guard of Hitler's from the Lebensdart, and he's the one who told Gerd Heidemann about going to South America to see Martin Bormann. And they did visit with Klaus Barbie and Ralph, Walter Ralph, and, of course, the Bormann thing. They make it sound mysterious. They don't say he did, and they don't say he didn't. Wilhelm Monkey comes up in this story, the one that worked with Fritz Kramer, and the leader of Hitler's Black Shirts, and the head of the Order of the Death's Head, and he served in that Ardennes Offensive. She talks about him and his important links with Gerd Heidemann. Carl Wolf is in this story. He's the one I wrote about in The Rebel and Operation Sunrise with Alan Dulles and the liaison of Himmler and Hitler. He's in this diary story. And Fritz Stiefel, that's a new name, S-T-I-E-F-E-L. He's a collector of Hitler memorabilia from Stuttgart, Germany, who first showed Heidemann the first diary with a Mr. Cujot, who's now in jail. The two of them are in jail. And Jacob Tiefenthaler, I mentioned him last week, T-I-E-F-E-N-T-H-A-L-E-R. He's a member of the Waffen-SS. He was a member of the Waffen who helps support and fund The Hague, that organization. But he has another job. He works for the United States Army in Germany and works continuously. He's hired by the U.S. Army in Germany in the audiovisual department while he's the bag man for the Waffen-SS. Gets a little more complicated. Okay, so those are some of the main characters. Now, I summarized the London Times, as I say, last April. These papers were authenticated. Many experts were involved. There were two reasons that you, Trevor Roper, would authenticate them. I said before, expert on British intelligence, and because he was on the board of the London Times, he had a reason to be accurate. And the ink and paper were not consistent until 1955. They weren't made. So they decided that 7 of the volumes were fake. Therefore, they didn't consider 60 to 62 volumes in total. They only looked at 7 and said, oh, these are fake. This is new paper. Therefore, fake diaries, case closed. We'll put the boys in jail. So you, Trevor Roper, who authenticated the diaries for the papers, had to come back after they'd had them around for 2 years and say, oh, no, mistake, forged. And Heidemann, working for Stern, had to take a huge sum of money and pass it on, which was like $5 million. And now he got some payment of several hundred thousand, which is linked to Bormann's money. There's 12 cash of Nazi money buried away, and he claims this is a down payment for future maps of where the Hitler treasures were that Goering had set aside, and he owns Goering's yacht, where Monkey and all these people, SS Carl Wolf, are floating and down to South America and still raising money for the Waffen-SS. So the story in the London Times, the new one, is that Mr. Heidemann got his diaries from Conrad Fischer, whose name is Conrad Cujot, K-U-J-A-U. Last May, when the diary episode closed for all purposes, he said, I wrote the diaries. And he was a partner with Mr. Heidemann, Gerd Heidemann, who was supposed to have kept the money. Now they are side by side in Hamburg prison, a few cells from each other. Gita traveled to East Germany. She went into Cujot's background. She went to the United States and visited the men themselves. Her conclusion in the London Sunday Times of December the 11th is that Cujot's confession about the diaries that he wrote them is a tapestry of lies. And she said the real hoax, this is her wording, is more elaborate and extraordinary than Cujot admits. And he has a complicated hoax. So Gerd Heidemann, she says, has been led. The guy from Stern, she claims, was innocent, although he's getting hundreds of thousands of dollars. She claims he was led into a web by a group of men with one common bond, membership in the Nazi SS. Now, how could Gerd Heidemann be led into anything? He's got a yacht with Wolf and Monkey and all the top people going down to see Klaus Barbie or Bormann and Ralph. How could he be led into anything? He's collected Hitler memorabilia. Mrs. Goering was at his wedding. He's close to the Goering daughter. I doubt. I think Gita, from what I heard about her, wants to believe he was led. As a matter of fact, and this is another coincidence in my life, my barest friends in New York that I stay with when I'm in New York stay at Gita Sereni's house in London, and she is with them when she's in New York. And so I do have her phone number to talk to her. She wants to believe that Heidemann has let. So her conclusion in the London Times is that Heidemann didn't know that the diaries were fake. He had them for 2 years and everybody was examining them. Maybe they were real. Maybe he didn't know. Maybe they're not fake. He doesn't know they're fake. I mean, we think they're fake, but Heidemann doesn't know they're fake. And he believes that Hitler wrote them. And she said the diaries were one strand, as I say, in that web that led her to believe that, and also, not her, pardon me, she led Heidemann to believe that Martin Bormann was, in fact, willing to see him on the basis of the diary. In fact, Martin Bormann designed the cover, and it has his shield on the Hitler diaries. The current shield Martin Bormann did. That was something that didn't come out in the first time the diaries came around. Now, in the prison in Hamburg, Gert Heidemann is, and she describes a contrast between the two. One, Heidemann is serious, the stern writer, frozen. He says, he's tense. He says, I'm not a crook. He's sort of Richard Nixon type. And Cujo is there, and he's joyful, and he's full of energy, and he's the prison clown, and he's gets into conversation with everybody. But he knows a lot. This is a joke for him. So what he said, this is a quote of her interview with Cujo, nobody knows as much about him, Adolf Hitler, as I do. And all these historians, this is his quote, all these historians ever do is repeat each other's mistakes. He's in the Hamburg jail. He said it took me no time at all, 2.5 hours, to figure out or reprint. He says he wrote a diary in 2.5 hours. And she said he can't resist that when telling her that when he gets out of jail, he will produce a really big surprise, Hitler's daughter. This is Mr. Cujo, who's claiming that he wrote the diaries. And, you know, nobody in Europe saw Hitler with a daughter, but a dentist at UCLA said that he lied about Eva Braun's dentures and that they were in Berlin, and that she did, in fact, leave the bunker. And this came out just recently in Sweden and in the United States, that he had lied about her. And many of you read in the last few weeks, and I haven't had a chance to do it, how when the Popessa died, she finally left the truth that the Vatican had kept the Tsar's daughters, two of them, and housed and protected them in the Vatican. And then 2 days later, Anastasia was kidnapped down in Delaware, Virginia, where she lives. They basketed her off somewhere 2 days after the story that she might have been living in the Vatican and protected. Well, this story goes on that Mr. Cujo describes what he did, but Gita Sereny says he's a compulsive liar, that everything he said to her was true. He has a Stuttgart lawyer who she refers to, who had information about diaries that were in his safe 3 or 4 years before he said he wrote them. Now he says, I wrote them, and I wrote them in these years, you know, like 1980-81. But 3 years before, they were somewhere else, and they existed. And his lawyer knows they existed. So he's saying he wrote them, but they weren't written by him. And he's not telling, but he's laughing in the jail, and he says, I'm going to give you the big one later. And so he's got this story for them, okay? So she says he won't answer how they belong somewhere else. In fact, they were brought to America, some of them, and sold to two Germans in Florida years before he said he wrote them. So she said he won't answer how they existed, and he won't talk. He talks about his patrons and how he offered the diaries for sale in America. But she said when she asked him points on the diary, he can't answer factual points taken from the diary, and yet he says he knows everything about Hitler. And when she asks him a specific thing, he changes the subject. And she described him, as I say, as a compulsive liar and wondered how he could go to trial because on the facts of the diary, he doesn't seem to know him, but he's claiming he did them. Now, she said Gert Heidemann's lying also. He's lying about the diaries and his line, the line to Martin Bormann. And she wonders where the strands of the web of fantasy weave and how they get trapped. She said, Mr. Heidemann believed that he knew the whereabouts of 12 hidden Nazi treasure cache, C-H-E-S, and he holds on to this belief, and he says he'll stay in prison forever. He won't reveal them because he swore not to, and he won't tell where they are, but he got at least $100,000 or more, a large hunk of money, and they tried to say that this was a payoff for what Stern bought the diary, that Cujo passed it to him, and he said no, that four men came to him as advance money for a share of the Nazi treasures, and that they will dig them when they're ready. And Goering was pretty good at that, so he not only has Goering's diary, but they're making these veiled threats, and the trial is going, and they know they're lying, but they're getting these veiled threats. Hello. We're going to run 5 minutes over because I had to redo the tape. Is that okay? Okay. Now, we go on to the London Times, December the 12th, 1983. She says that all part of Conrad Cujo's story is riddled with deception. He sort of lies about where he was born. He lies about his businesses. He lies about certain customers that he has. But he's a mystery man who has access to collectors of Hitler memorabilia and keeps on to them and has made networks with people interested in military replica of the Third Reich. He lived in West Germany, returned to East Germany 13 years later, and began smuggling these things that were salted away in East Germany with his girlfriend out of the country, even in parts of pianos or furniture. So that on the part of the eastern side, where the fortune is supposed to be buried, they're smuggling these relics into Germany that are actual Nazi relics. And this London Times goes into the familiarity that Cujo has with Hitler. He was just a child, a very small child, when Hitler was in power. But they were brought up by people who adored Adolf Hitler and carried on the tradition. Cujo was 7 years old when the war was over in 1945, and Heidemann was 14. They're too young for the Third Reich, but it became an obsession with them and with their families who were involved with the Reich. So they got involved in that. Heidemann, as I say, bought the Hermann Göring yacht that was a means of informal reunion of former Nazis, and she goes into that again, and I've mentioned those people on the yacht. Now, the background of Cujo was the father was a Nazi party worker. He was interested in the Hoffman Group, that he described as the odious Hoffman Group, a neo-Nazi youth organization, and so that he got his son as part of that. And they were close to The Hague, that organization, the Mutual Aid Society of the Waffen-SS. Hitler's driver, Erich Kempka, is the head of the Waffen-SS. So Cujo went with his collection and began to meet with Erich Kempka recently in the last years, the head of the Waffen-SS. They were meeting in Stuttgart, and they met an industrialist named Fritz Stiefel, S-T-E-I-E-F-E-L. I mentioned him, a businessman. Stiefel has a lot of money, and he supports The Hague, the organization that supports the Waffen-SS, and meets with Hitler's driver, Erika Kempka. They have parties, and this is where Mr. Monke and these other top people get together. They collect Hitler's relics. They support all kinds of activity of the former Waffen-SS and take care of each other. As I say, they meet with Hitler's driver, and Mr. Stiefel helps support them, and there's a lot of money coming in. Now, Mr. Cujo was in the United States in 1976 and met in Florida with Wolfgang Schulze, S-C-H-U-L-Z-E, and a Peter Stockkite, S-T-O-C-K-I-C-H-T, from Stuttgart, a lawyer. Now, these diaries were sold, some of them, not 60. Hitler's diaries were sold in the United States in 1976 to these Germans from Stuttgart, where all of these people come from and work and move together in the United States years before Cujo said he actually wrote them. Now, Mr. Stiefel, who's supporting The Hague, called in a man. His name is August Prisak, P-R-I-E-S-A-C-K. He works at the Brown House, which is a Nazi party building, Munich headquarters in Munich, and he authenticated a while back the diaries as 101% accurate. Prisak is an expert on the diaries and told Stiefel they were. Then Prisak brought to Stiefel's house another professor, an Eberhard Jackel, J-A-C-K-E-L, who's a Third Reich historian. And they were working together on the diaries. He said, this is all there is to it. You know, these are Hitler's diaries. So the Hitler's friends and buddies had some of the diaries in the United States. They're supporting the Waffen-SS. They're with Hitler's chauffeur, Hitler's pilot, Mr. Wilhelm Monke, that with Mr. Karl Wolf, and the whole gang begins to get closer together. Now, I mentioned another person who this really terrified. It's hard to believe Mr. Tiefenthaler, T-I-E-F-E-N-T-H-L-E-R, was the person, he's an important person, Mr. and Mrs. Jacob Tiefenthaler, who introduced Gerd Heidemann, who has the yacht, the floating Nazis, who goes down to South America, to Fritz Stiefel, the man who's funding the Waffen-SS. You won't remember these names, but Tiefenthaler works as chief of audio-visual instruction for United States Army in southern Germany. Now, Gita Sereny wrote this story in the present tense. She didn't say he worked for. Tiefenthaler of the Waffen-SS works with Wilhelm Mohnke. That's Fritz Kramer's buddy. And SS Karl Wolf, the buddy of Donovan and Alan Dulles and J. Hoover, and also Herbert Hoover, going back to those days. He knows, and Tiefenthaler works with Gerd Heidemann and the gang. He introduced Heidemann to Stiefel. Stiefel funds The Hague, and it's run by Hitler's chauffeur and involved a friend of theirs from the SS is Hans Bauer, who's Hitler's pilot. So all together is a member of the Chief of Audiovisual Instruction for the United States Army, Waffen-SS, working with Wilhelm Mohnke of the Waffen-SS and Karl Wolf, and friends of Fritz Kramer, introducing Heidemann to Stiefel, the wealthy man who wants to buy Heidemann's yacht, the meeting place of the Nazis. And Cujo worked with Stiefel. They brought Cujo together. Stiefel would bring Cujo together with Gerd Heidemann. Heidemann, with the floating yacht and all these people, meets Cujo. Cujo says, I have these diaries. Heidemann believes it. Why does he believe it? They're not sold on Hollywood Boulevard. They're not sold off Broadway in New York. This isn't some kind of a forged piece of paper. These are 62 books, of which 7 were thrown out as not being accurate, that were authenticated by British intelligence chief Hugh Trevor Roper, by Stern magazine. They had years to check it out. So a percentage of them could be true. I said that last April. I don't say it's true, but a percentage could be true. But the meetings of this house, at Mr. Stiefel's house, of Mr. Cujo, of Stiefel funding The Hague, the Waffen people, only name missing out of here, we have the U.S. Army. Does Mr. Jacob Tiefenthaler work with Fritz Kramer of the American Army? I mean, the U.S. Army is the U.S. Army, and the Pentagon's the Pentagon. So what you get is this floating yacht, the Nazis, current and past, the Nazis, such as Kramer, wrote the history of these people working together, the Fuhrer instructing them as of November of 1944 in touch with them. They're all geographically in the same place. The only thing missing out of this Hitler diary story out of the London Times of December the 11th is Fritz Kramer. And so we'll continue. See, the point, it doesn't prove one way or other that the diaries are fake or real. What it does is to bring out more people like Jacob Tiefenthaler or this wealthy man. If Mr. Heidemann is in jail, he has a financier to buy the yacht so that it stays in the same hands. I didn't know that the name of Goering's wife, Karen, she was Swedish aristocracy, and she was supposed to add legitimacy to his boorishness. Mrs. Hermann Goering was a fine lady from Sweden, and Karen II, the yacht, was named after her. But if The Hague is active, if the Waffen-SS is active, if the Sunday London Times of December the 18th says that all that money went to Hitler's driver, Hitler's chauffeur, the Waffen-SS, the man from the Pentagon, then we're really getting the team closer together. And I think it would be interesting to know what a member of the audiovisual part of the U.S. Army is doing with meetings of the Waffen-SS. This is a subject that I think is the big story of 1963. It almost slipped away, but thanks to Gita Sereny, she suspected something or she wouldn't have spent 7 months going across back and forth the United States, East Germany, West Germany, and interviewing as many people as she could. Thanks to her perseverance, she's pulled in more names. She doesn't come out with the answer, but she found out where the money's going, and she smelled a rat. She's close to the man who ran Treblinka. She's close to the Nazis. She likes working and investigating with them, and so she is continuing. I think I understand she's not going to do more on the Hitler diary, but if you get this close, and if they start producing Hitler's daughter or his family or something about him, she may surface, go under, do her book on Speer. She got a contract, I understand, on that, so she's going to go back to that. But if it's this interesting and this many people, I don't think that she's just going to let it drop. Maybe 7 months from now it'll be a bombshell. But we've never heard about Mr. Stifel and his funding. And incidentally, what they collect are oil paintings of Hitler, things he painted and drew, and he had hobbies, you know, art and so forth. And we'll keep up with the story next week. Now, I'm running over time here, and our tape is about running out. So we'll continue with this next week, and I'll put on some music. I said, we're going to get our blues in about 3 minutes. I said I'd go on till 9:05, but I think we'll stop now. And I'll just put on music for a few minutes, and then we'll begin the blues program. This is Mae Brussel on KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, and I'll be back with you next week. Oh, we're ready for the blues right now. Okay.